AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour today. And just in the nick of time, we have all of our guests here. Today I have Bruce Jaffe. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi.
And Gary Kent. All of our listeners will probably recognize Gary's name.
Hi, Kurt. Yeah. No, Bruce.
Bruce and Gary and I have been collaborating for a long, long time. I think Bruce, in our earlier conversation, you were saying it was probably 14 years ago we kind of got into this discussion.
Yes. Yeah, and we worked together on the multi-organizational task force that Jim Plasker led in 1999 and 2000, which resulted in some significant modifications to the NCWS model law and model rules that I think we'll be talking about today.
Right, that's exactly right. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is because we don't hear a lot of conversation about progress or lack thereof or good or bad or those kind of things or other changes that may have occurred as a result of the work of that group. And honestly, some of the things that happened in that or from that task force were some ideas or different ideas about license surveying licensure and surveying practice and those kind of things as well. So I just thought it'd be a good idea. I'd been chatting with Gary about this, and then I know he had been talking, Bruce, with you and some other folks at ERISA about the topic or general topic. And so I just thought it'd be a really good idea to sort of catch people up, I think, to where the discussion is and some of the things that have been going on during that period. And I don't know, Gary, if you want to chime in on that from the surveyor perspective in terms of discussion as we begin the show or not, but certainly want to get Bruce to chat about it too.
Yeah, sure. You know, my involvement was just here just a few months ago when I was invited, I guess, by one of the ERISA staff to join in a meeting that was going to be happening at the ESRI user conference, and so I popped in and joined Bruce and the other folks that were there, and we had a pretty productive meeting for what, Bruce, probably a good hour and a half or so.
Yeah, and I was real glad to meet you, Gary, and you have been contributing to discussion that's been going on about the boundaries of professional practice within our ERISA organization for several months now, and I appreciate your continued participation.
It's been very interesting and kind of enlightening to, you know, get the perspective from the other side of some of the things going on.
As a matter of fact, I've been remiss going into the show and jumped right into the conversation. I didn't give Bruce an opportunity to share with folks what his background is, and I think most of the listeners know yours, Gary, but we'll get something from you as well. But Bruce,
sure.
If you would just let folks know about what your background is, and
sure.
your involvement with ERISA, but just your background in terms of your professional side, too.
Well, I've been a GIS consultant helping local communities, city and county governments, and some private enterprises use GIS or make better use of GIS for, I've been doing this for about 35 years now. And I've been getting more and more involved over the last 20 years, I think, in public policy issues around the use of geographic information and GIS systems generally. And one of those issues has been what we're currently calling the boundaries of professional practice. And in terms of this discussion today and others that Gary was just mentioning that we had at the ESRI conference, it's about, you know, what are the things that in the mapping profession that require surveyor licensure, and what are the types of activities that GIS professionals can perform and don't require survey licensure. Kurt, as you well know, you and I and I think it was an 8 or 9 of our colleagues, surveyors and a couple of other GIS consultants, worked for over a year to try to define that. And the process itself, I think, was just phenomenal in that we all stayed with it, even though we went through a lot of difficult discussions with each other. We continued to listen and respect to each other and came out with a really wonderful, I think, working document that that does help to define this. And but I think that we still have a task ahead to let our colleagues in our respective professions know what these boundaries are, because they make good sense. And over the years, what used to be more of a combative relationship, I think it's much more of a collaborative relationship now, where, you know, we're both working for the same kinds of clients, or in fact the same exact clients, helping to map what exists in the real world in their computer systems, and we really have a collaborative relationship. That's how I feel. Gary?
Yeah, I would like to think we've overcome, and I still kind of chuckle because to this day I'll hear people, surveyors, talking about whatever new technology, you know, whatever's the newest and greatest thing, whether it's machine control or laser scanning or whatever, and say, you know, we need to stay on top of this because we lost GIS, you know, way back when. And I always kind of laugh at that. It's like, no, nobody lost anything. GIS is a unbelievable technology and, you know, process and system and all of those things that go into GIS that, you know, surveyors have input into and you know, can contribute to, but the average surveyor, even the you know, the surveyors out on the fringe, I think weren't even, you know, today don't feel like, well, gosh, if I had jumped on it, I could have been the GIS person. I mean, if that was the case, I don't know who would do surveying, but you know, I do think that surveyors dropped the ball to an extent, and I think that we've over the more recent years have made great strides in, you know, trying to close that gap. You know, the ESRI and previously ESRI Survey Summit was all, you know, for years was called bridging the gap, and I think we have made strides there and trying to understand each other and how things fit. And the model law really is the, I constantly go back to the model law. That seems to have withstood the test of time up to this point, at least.
Yeah, and you seem to have had good influence in that regard in your state of Indiana, getting the Indiana regulations in line with the model law.
Yes, when we redefined surveying here 2 years ago, I guess, we basically took the model law. We had to make a few modifications, as any state would, to meet certain things that are in our laws. But we pretty much took it almost verbatim. And there were concerns, and maybe your point, Bruce, there were concerns in Indiana on the GIS side, and I don't think on the photogrammetry side, that was a little different issue, but well, what if we adopt the model law, but then the board doesn't follow through with the model rules? We've got a big gap there,
yeah.
And so we actually decided to incorporate the model rules as part of our registration statute. So our statute includes both the model law and the model rules. So there's no gap there, and we have, for example, a definition of authoritative, and all that stuff's right in our statute. So I felt really good about what we were able to accomplish with the help and input of the GIS folks and the photogrammetric folks.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept that you guys followed in Indiana. Are you aware if any other states have actually done what you did or something really close to what you did?
As far as the law, as far as incorporating the rules in the law,
yeah.
Or as far as the outreach, I'm not aware of any, Kurt, although it seems to me maybe there is someone else out there who did that.
I think Oregon is close. I'm not sure if they adopted the model rules, which is really
okay.
Excellent innovation for state.
Yeah, to me maybe I had seen that somewhere, but I don't recall for sure.
Oregon went through a deep process with their GIS as well as their surveyor community to come up with their regulations in the last couple of years. So they're another model, if you will, for collaboration between our two communities.
I think it seemed to me that the key is maybe not so much in, you know, we use model law, we use model rules, whatever. The key was in the outreach and the collaboration. That's really, you know, whatever you end up with, if everybody's happy with it, who cares, you know, how you got there. I think that's what we decided. And in the legislative world, one of the things you learn by experience when you go in to find a state legislator to sponsor your bill, one of the questions that they will ask is, okay, fine, but who is going to come out in opposition to this? And, you know, you need to either have them on board or be talking with them or whatever. So we anticipated that ahead of time. And, you know, aside from the fact we knew we'd be asked the question, we felt like we have to do this. This is something that is kind of a due diligence in the process, because what good is it adopting a law that's immediately going to put everybody up in arms?
Yeah, you're really right about. Go ahead, Bruce.
I was just going to say, I'm the these last 2 years I've been functioning as the chair of ERISA's Policy Advisory Committee, which advises on policies for the ERISA board to undertake. And by the way, I should just say ERISA is probably the foremost professional association for GIS professionals, both in this country and internationally. I want to give a good plug for ERISA.
That's a great thing. We're about 30 seconds from a break, so we can carry this on just a little bit further, I guess, as we move ahead. But we'll pick back up on this. And Bruce, I think it'd be a good idea to not only talk about the policy advisory committee at ERISA, but it really explained to folks what ERISA is, so everybody knows. And we may even want to talk about the model law and model rules a little bit, because I'm not sure everybody actually understands what they say either. So as we're moving forward through the show, maybe we can pick up on some of that. But for now, let's go to our first break, and we'll be right back.
Okay. Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio. And you're listening to America's Web Radio.
We're back to our second segment today with Bruce Joffe and Gary Kent, and we're discussing, in general, surveying in GIS, more specifically, model law, model rules, and a number of other items as we're going through today's discussion. Bruce, before we went on the break, I mentioned the fact that it might be worthwhile to explain to people what ERISA stands for, or what the acronym stands for, maybe what ERISA stands for, too, if you wish, and who its members are and objectives, those kind of things, just briefly.
Sure. ERISA stands for the Urban and Regional Information Systems Association, now in its 50th year. It's comprised of mostly GIS professionals who are dedicated to making public agencies' function easier using all kinds of information systems. But over the last 25 years, it's really focused on GIS, although not exclusively on GIS.
Now, are most members public agency folks?
I'd say 40% are public agencies, 40 to 50% are public agencies, federal, state, and local governments. And some utilities, and then the other 50% are private enterprises, consultants, software people.
That might be a fact that is unknown to a lot of folks, because I think a lot of people would have thought that government utility side would have been much higher than that in your membership. So that's an interesting fact.
That's my guess. I'm not qualified to. I could be off by 20% on that. So
yeah, still though, that's a pretty large percentage of private folks in the organization. And maybe another thing you can touch on is the certification, which I know is not specifically within ERISA, but ERISA very involved in it.
Yeah, ERISA was instrumental in beginning the GIS Certification Institute. Back in, I think it was 2004, I was the second chair of the Institute. And now we have, it's going stronger than ever. We started with five organizations, and I believe there are now eight organizations that are our members. The idea is to create a method for determining and certifying, who is qualified as a GIS professional, and doing it multi-organizationally so that you don't have each individual organization with a separate certification. Over the last several years, they've been deeply thinking about what the body of knowledge is that GIS professionals ought to have, and they're currently working on coming up with an exam. So while right now it's a qualification-based certification based on years of experience, professional experience, education, and community service, it's going to expand the qualification an exam probably within the next 2 years as well. One of the things that have motivated us to do this, besides the inherent need to, was surveyors saying, well, we're licensed and, our qualifications are clearly determined, but GIS professionals, anyone can put his hand on the rock, look up at the sun, and say, I am a GIS professional. And, that was causing a lot of discomfort, and rightly so, I think, for surveyors. But now we have an increasingly robust certification process that I think solves a lot of the surveyors' doubt about who we are and, you know, what we know, and it also is bolstering our own profession. GIS professionals, which is the certification, are typically earning between 8% and 18% more because of their certification. So it serves us as individuals as well as the profession as a whole.
Gary, do you have any experience with GIS? You haven't approached that, I don't guess.
I haven't. I should have back when I could have got grandfathered in a little bit more easily than what I could now. But our firm, Schneider Corporation, here in Indianapolis, and we've got a couple offices actually that are, you know, exclusively GIS offices, one in Florida and one in Iowa. We have a very large and active GIS group in our company, and we're kind of unique in that sense because we have those folks have the support of our survey folks, and it's not unusual actually that I would have a call from Iowa or someone upstairs here in Indianapolis that with a question about maybe they're doing dealing with some kind of a parcel split or, you know, some kind of parcel issue and not really sure how to map it, and that's not at all unusual. And so I think most GIS companies don't have that kind of resource, you know, handy, certainly within house, and I think that's served us really, really well. We have a number of GISPs here at Schneider.
Yeah, I don't know statistics on this, obviously, but just the sense of things, as I talk to people, more companies like yours, and some maybe not as large as yours, are beginning to build that type of team, just recognizing the commercial possibilities, if for no other reason.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, as you know, Kurt, and Bruce has heard the same thing, that, you know, where, in fact, we've had some of those conversations, Bruce, on and some of the email threads that have been going on, you know, where is surveying going, and, you know, what's a survey going to look like, and that sort of thing. And I think, Kurt, just in Kansas City, I may have said to you the thing that I've told a number of people, and I said, I think that's actually a two-pronged question, because one question is, where's the surveying profession going, and another question is, where's the surveying business going, and those are not necessarily the same thing at all. So when, you know, when people make comments like that, I usually say, "Well, what are you talking about?" You know, because those can be two entirely different things.
As far as where is surveying going, Gary, you mentioned before that, you know, some surveyors have thought, "Well, we missed the train on GIS," but I don't think that's the case. As you don't either, as you mentioned. Surveyors can, and some do, and I suppose your company is one of them, that can and does use GIS to help manage your survey data and to help you with the surveying tasks that you have. The GIS tasks the GIS tasks for mapping, I'm going to say for a minute, are different tasks. And one of the problems that I think that historically we've had is that the word mapping means different things in different contexts and to different people. When mapping means original measurements and observations that are used to make authoritative documentation of location, that's the kind of work that surveyors do, and they can certainly use GIS and the GIS database in doing that. When those original measurements are then used in a referential maps for facility management, planning, natural resources, all kinds of things that are not the authoritative documentation of location, but they may be authoritative in terms of characteristics. That's where the GIS database is used by GIS professionals. And as the model laws and the model rules particularly outline, you know, the dividing line is pretty clear. But both surveyors and GIS professionals can make use of this technology and many of the other technologies that are coming in, like handheld GPS and now UAS's drones.
Yeah, and actually, the I totally agree with your statement that between the model laws and the model rule, I think the delineation between what's surveying and what's GIS is quite clear in the model laws and the model rule. I know one of the problems that exists out there is that not all states follow the model laws. And Kurt mentioned the model law and the model rules are the documents created by NCWS and the task force that you guys were talking about a little bit earlier here 10, 15 years ago, in a great part to address this GIS survey issue. So if you stick just with the model law and the model rules, I think it's quite clear. But there are some states that don't follow those, and some of those states, I know there has been some activity in some of those states that I think muddies the water and probably creates some hard feelings because someone's interpreting something, you know, to their advantage and to the disadvantage of others. And that, I think, is the gist of what we start talking about in my involvement in this is, you know, how can we overcome these situations that cause distrust and bad feelings?
In my capacity on the ERISA Policy Advisory Committee, we have gotten complaints from GIS professionals in a couple of states that they think are just what you described, Gary, that there's been the state's regulations restrict GIS professionals perhaps more than they should, in other words, require that they be licensed surveyors. When I read the text of some of those regulations very carefully, it's somewhat ambiguous. It's not clear to me whether there really is a problem or not. And so I will ask our listeners out here, if you have some specific issue with regard to the regulations for survey licensure in your state, to let me know, let Gary know as well. Some of those issues may be a perception that that the surveyor licensure is restrictive of GIS professional activity, and other concerns may be where GIS professionals have practiced surveying without a license. And we really need some clear and explicit examples to move forward to help resolve where a problem does exist.
That's a good idea, and it's also right at our break. So well, let's come back and talk about what some of those are in our next segment. We'll be back in a few moments.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs, and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel, and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
We're back for our third segment today with Bruce Joffe and Gary Kent, and this is the time of the show when our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes Contest, is part of what we do here, and as our regular listeners know, the first person to email into quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com with the correct answer to the question I'm going to ask our guest will be the winner for the day. So I'm going to ask a really simple question. What does GIS stand for?
Either. Oh, isn't this your listeners are supposed to email in the answer? You want us to answer it?
You're supposed to answer, and then the first person who writes in what you answer is correct.
Okay.
So,
well, it's Geographic Information System.
Geographic Information System. And as you said during break, I guess we won't accept Get It Surveyed.
Right.
Now, you know, I might comment on that, and we were just talking about that. But you know, if GIS was all about get it surveyed, we still wouldn't have any GIS. There wouldn't be a viable GIS in the United States if that was the case, because surveyors kind of need to get over that issue. You have to look at the money, you have to look at the purpose of a GIS, and yeah, if you want a GIS that's intended to represent that level of accuracy and precision, yeah, you better get it surveyed, but nobody has that kind of money on a large scale to do it. So, you know, you do what you can.
Well, it's not really about accuracy and precision, I don't think, because it's about the use. And the amount of money you have determines how accurate your mapping is going to be in your GIS. Or in your survey, you know, you map, your surveyors mm-hmm. collect data that's appropriate for the purpose that you're collecting it, and there may be different accuracy standards depending on what your use is. But once that data has been collected, that measurement data, and is used for the authoritative document on the location of the corners, the lines, the pipes, the fixed works, the terrain, whatever the measurement is being made of, the other kinds of professional tasks that GIS professionals do have to do with geospatial needs analysis, designing the database, data modeling, geographic analysis, building and maintaining the computer architecture, managing the system, cartography and data visualization. All of those things, for the most part, surveyors may do some of that, but it's beyond the traditional task of licensed surveyors. And so that's,
you know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things I hear in conversation really quite often is when we use the word authoritative, and I've actually even seen this in some reports that have come from different agencies that we get involved with in trying to describe things. People get confused, I think, about what that means. Some folks actually think it means authoritative is something provided through a government source. In other words, a map that the government provides is an authoritative map, which may well be the truth, but authoritative in terms of the model law, model rules, could very well mean something else in terms of professionally provided by someone who has the capability and the responsibility to do so. And I don't know if you guys want to chat about that a little bit, but I do hear that a lot. There's a difference of opinion about what that term means.
Yeah, and actually in the conversations or the email threads that we've been involved with, Bruce and I have been That has cropped up several times, and my reminder is always, I mean, when I use the term authoritative, it is in the context of the model law and the model rules. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. It throws it open to, as Bruce said a few minutes ago, well, there may be authoritative data inside there, but that's not really what, you know, what we're talking about when we use the term authoritative in the context of the model law and model rule, which I can paraphrase, but I think it means authoritative in the context of being presented in or as a surveyor produced product or service, I think is kind of paraphrasing that. So if it's something that falls under the realm of professional surveying as a plat or some other production of a professional surveyor, then that is considered authoritative in that context, and otherwise it's wide open.
Yes, you know, the creation of a survey document by a licensed surveyor that's an authoritative document. ASPRS has a similar definition of authoritative, which is meeting clearly defined standards such as geospatial deliverables that have been sealed by a licensed or certified professional. And ASPRS, just to define it, that's the Association of
It's American Society for
And Remote Sensing.
Correct.
There's also a kind of a circular definition, which is authoritative location is location that's relied on the basis for making other determinations, a location determined by a body with sufficient authority to require adherence to its determination of that location. And then authoritative documents are those documents designated by the government authority as the descriptor of the authoritative location. So if a public agency says, you know, this kind of document is the authority for this kind of information, then it becomes the authoritative document.
It almost
seems
that,
for instance, tax maps are not authoritative for location, for the location of the boundaries. They are authoritative for the identification of the property for taxation purposes. But a tax map is not a survey document. The survey documents are what are they're not authoritative for location. They're the closest thing. They're the closest evidence for the authoritative of location of boundaries. But really, as you guys know, adjudicated agreement between adjacent property owners that determines the actual location.
And I think that's something that is unfortunate in a sense, that you have the two completely legitimate definitions of the word, but yet because they are so closely related in terms of something generated by a professional service, as Gary's pointed out, or something that it can be relied upon, as you've pointed out, Bruce, I think that somehow makes it more difficult for people to understand the differences. And it's a shame we don't have a better terminology to define, to make a clear definition.
One of the things my GIS colleagues about it, when they're using a GIS map to determine, let's say, if a property is inside or outside of a designated zone, you know, where let's say 1,000 feet from a school, you can't have a certain kind of bookstore. And a property owner comes to the desk in the planning department and says, you know, can I have a permit for this bookstore in this location? Well, using the GIS map, which is only referential, I advise my professional colleagues to say words like, it appears that you are inside or outside the zone, but we recommend that you hire a surveyor to make an actual determination of the distance. The GIS is not the official determinator of whether you're inside or outside of a zone, because it's not the the authoritative determination on location.
That's an interesting and very insightful perspective on it, and completely opposite of, I think I mentioned this on a show one time before, a friend of mine was in a local tax mapping office one day, and a lady came in with a survey plat and asked that her land, she be charged fewer taxes because her survey indicated that she owned less than she's being charged for, which is not uncommon at all. And the response was, sorry, our records say that you own this, so take that back to the surveyor and tell him he did it wrong. So that's an entirely different approach to the situation. But yeah. I think points out that the conversation we're having here is that it is confusing, and all of us, through our organizations and collectively, need to try to be more diligent in helping people understand that difference.
Yeah, and you know that was a good example, Kurt, and I told Bruce and his colleagues too that those are the types of things that make surveyors crazy, and the interesting thing is, you know, that's not a GIS thing, you know, that's simply an untrained employee who is,
right,
you know, saying things that they don't know. So you know, it's kind of like, you know, to the surveyor who was told that, they shouldn't go out and denigrate the GIS profession because of that. They should perhaps go visit that office and say, can we sit down and talk a little bit about this so that we can better understand each other?
Yeah, that's
and,
exactly
and really,
correct.
That's part of what Bruce's folks are trying to do in ERISA is, you know, can we foster some sort of ongoing collaborative effort to, you know, to eliminate those kinds of things and to have some common ground that we can all work on the same level and have an understanding.
Yeah, actually, that's a very, very good, I think, a very good way and opportunity for collaboration with ERISA and NSPS to work on helping to make those definitions more clear and promote them and instruct about them. I think that would be a great joint effort.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Although I think that, you know, if we just help to get people more aware of the NCWS model rules, a lot of those definitions are pretty clear that, you know, they're by example. They're giving examples of what can and cannot constitute the work of a licensed surveyor.
That was the value of the rules, because it does give specific examples in there.
We're 30 seconds away from break, but when we come back, I want to talk more about the rules. And Bruce, you talked about earlier during the other break, quote, where people can actually find those and what they mean. So I think that's a great lead in to that next segment, where we can talk about those rules and help people grasp them and take time to read what they actually say.
Okay.
So let's go to that last break. We'll be back shortly.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back with Bruce Jaffe and Gary Kent for our final segment today on NSPS Radio Hour. We've had a really good discussion, I think, about our organizations, about opportunities to collaborate, about the confusing aspects of determining what is authoritative and what is not. And we've had spent a fair amount of time talking about the model law and the model rules. And so, as Bruce pointed out before we were going to break, it's a good idea, I think, to give some references to those. And Bruce has an outline that he's going to share with us now to help people find that information and understand it.
Okay, thanks, Kirk. The model rules, you can find them at ncwes.org. Dig down in there. There's the model law and the model rules. The model rules are eight paragraphs, numbered paragraphs, describing what they call the inclusions to the practice of surveying. These are the activities that require survey licensure or required to be done by a licensed surveyor. And then there are, in that section, 210.25A, and then there is section 210.25B, which are the exclusions, which are the activities that do not require the practice be done by a licensed surveyor. For the inclusions, the practices that require responsible charge of a licensed surveyor, it's the creation of maps and georeference databases representing authoritative locations for boundaries, fixed works, topography, where the data is provided as a survey product. It also includes the original data acquisition when used for the authoritative location of those things. The certification of positional accuracy of maps, and that's an important one, I think. The adjustment or authoritative interpretation of raw survey data. GIS-based parcel or cadastral mapping data used for authoritative boundary definition. That's, I think, important, like the use when it's for the authoritative boundary definition. The authoritative interpretation of maps, deeds, and other land title documents. The acquisition of field data required to authoritatively position fixed works. And the analysis, adjustment, transformation of cadastral data resulting in the affirmation of positional accuracy. That's the short form. Just a few words of much longer paragraphs of what you need a licensed surveyor to perform. Then for the exclusions, there's an initial paragraph that kind of gives the overall criteria, which is a distinction is made between making or documenting original measurements in the creation of survey products, which require licensure, versus the copying, interpretation, or representation of those measurements, which would be putting them into a GIS for other purposes. And further, a distinction is made according to the intent, use, or purpose of the measurement products, whether it's for determining the definitive location, which would be a licensed surveyor's work, versus using those products for planning, infrastructure management, or general information. And then there are the eight examples of the exclusions from the practice of surveying, which includes general maps for educational tools, reference illustrative guides, the transcription of previously georeferenced data into GIS when it's not intended to indicate authoritative location, the transcription of public record data into tax maps, that are not intended for authoritative boundary, property boundaries. The preparation of any map by any federal government agency, and the reason for that is that the federal government is not doesn't have to follow state licensing laws because it's the federal government. And incorporating any of those documents or databases prepared by a federal agency into a GIS. Paragraph number 6 is really interesting because it says inventory maps and databases created by any organization of the physical features over which they have the rights and management responsibility. Even though those are fixed works, let's say a utility company, if they map their own fixed works, they don't have to use a licensed surveyor, even though it is recommended because of the expertise that licensed surveyors have. The same logic applies. You can perform a medical procedure. You can perform an operation, say an appendix operation, without being a licensed doctor on yourself. You can't perform it on others, but you can do it on yourself if you want. In other words, it's recommended that you use a licensed doctor, but you don't have to. And same thing with a licensed surveyor. If a utility maps their own infrastructure, they probably should use a licensed surveyor, but they don't have to. Then there was the problem that came up in our discussions, and Kurt and I were part of that discussion of, well, what about when utility companies give their map data to the city or the county for use in a larger GIS system? Then it's no longer for internal use only, and so really it should be conducted by a licensed professional. And paragraph 6 has this exclusion that says the distribution of these maps outside the organization must contain appropriate metadata describing the accuracy, method of compilation, data sources and dates, and disclaimers of use indicating that the data are not a survey product. And so in that regard, the GIS maps that are used by counties and cities part of them may have come from utility companies do not require survey licensure, as long as they have those disclaimers and the appropriate metadata and so forth.
And once again, I think that last one is one of the ones that causes issues. I don't know, is Gary back? I hope we didn't lose Gary.
I'm here.
You are back. Okay. Sorry about that.
Yep.
Another one of those issues Bruce was just talking about with the metadata and providing information for outside of the agency or the entity use. We've had a number of cases recently where articles are written in the newspaper and videos are made telling landowners how they can come down and get the coordinates from the county map and take their GPS unit out and locate their own property corners and that kind of thing. But again, that's clearly not what was intended.
That's so, absolutely misinformation.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that happens. And I don't know, have you guys at all, Bruce, and I know, Gary, we collectively as surveyors and presenters and that kind of thing have attempted to do this sometimes, to provide workshops to the groups of people who actually are using this data, like those folks at the county or whatever, to help make this more clear. Have you guys done that, Bruce? And if you have you been successful in getting the message across? Because sometimes we don't seem to be able to.
Every time I address my GIS colleagues, I remind them that in order for GIS maps to be referential and not under the purview of a licensed surveyor, they actually have to reference, they need explicit linkage to the original source documents. In the database, there has to be a link that that says where the original line work came from. There needs to be explicit written disclaimers in the GIS data that says this is not a professional survey product. And there needs to be adequate metadata that
describes the locational accuracy, the date of the data capture, the source documents, and the method of compilation. We have been lax. Our profession has been lax in following all of those requirements, and I keep trying to remind my colleagues that if we're going to be referential, we have to actually refer back to the original survey documents.
Yeah, I think, Gary, maybe you will chime on this too, but it seems to me a great idea would be to have a Bruce and Gary show to go around because sometimes just the organization and the situation that Bruce is involved in makes it easier for a surveyor if they're collaborating with somebody to go in and to talk to folks about this kind of thing, because sometimes we get a little preachy and people are suspect of what we're trying to say. And it just seems to me like there's a great opportunity out there to help a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's kind of a safe place to have some of the conversations and the different perspectives. I mean, if we as surveyors go out, you know, whether it's true or not, people have a perception we're saying one thing, and that's, I think, the value of the whole collaborative effort that, you know, we can have the two groups in the room at the same time, and you know, I think that carries a lot more weight and means a lot more to people than just hearing from one side or the other.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We, by the way, have about 2 minutes left today, so before we get too far and I forget to do it, I want to thank you both for being with me. It's been a great conversation. I think maybe this discussion could lead to some collaboration between our organizations to, even after all these years, Bruce, after these 14 years, help people better understand what the model law and the model rules is all about and what the application is.
We've been conducting workshops on GIS and surveying at ERISA, and have been discussing trying to do some kind of a collaborative conference with a surveyor organization like NSPS. So this is good, very timely.
Yeah, and as you may know, we're trying to begin a conference like that next spring, although we started so late that most of the people, like you guys, already had plans. So I'm hoping that maybe for 16 we will be able to pull that kind of thing together where we have enough organizations like yours and ours there that we can discuss these things and draw a lot of people in to hear about it.
It makes good sense because, you know, compared to all the other professions in the world, mapping is like, you know, this small little corner of the world, and everyone else sees us as the same. So, you know, we shouldn't be fighting with each other. We can be working together for the same purposes.
For sure, and one of the things that we've talked about in the email threads and the conversations with that I've been involved with for ERISA is you know, encouraging GIS folks to get involved with local surveying organizations, state surveying organizations, and vice versa. You know, that there should be outreach going on.
And with that, we are near the end. We have maybe 10 seconds left. So, again, thank you both for being with me today. It's been a great conversation. Maybe we can continue this on another show later on and begin some collaboration among our groups.
Thank you.
So thanks again for being with me. Take care.
Okay.